Welcome to the Coffee and Cocaine Show. Today we begin a new segment with my friend, Mr. Tyler James Hill.
What up?
It's just going to be us, and it's going to be interesting. And
Just chatting,
just bullshitting. You know, you might call it a fireside chat, but we don't. You know, we're too poor and don't own a fireplace.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a typical millennial situation here in America. We just love our avocado toast too much.
Yeah, we need a not a fireside chat, but a radiator chat.
Do you think we could found something called Avocado Toast Anonymous and it would kick off? Like it would, you know, we might change some lives. Maybe get the boomers to give us some money so we can teach millennials not to eat avocado toast and instead to buy their overpriced houses that they haven't upgraded since 1973.
You know, my favorite thing about the houses thing is a few months ago I saw boomers complaining that millennials weren't buying their houses. And then last week I saw an article with boomers complaining that millennials were buying their houses. Like whatever the millennials do, the boomers really don't like it.
I just want to take a moment and mention that I'm drinking cherry Pepsi instead of my normal cherry Coke.
Oh,
as I continue to make a stand against Coca-Cola and their nonsense. Pepsi is the drink of a new generation, don't you think, Tyler James Hill?
I mean, everybody asks if Pepsi's okay, you know, is Pepsi okay? Is Pepsi okay? And nobody's checking on Dr. Pepper. Like, is Dr. Pepper okay? Like, just be an ally, you know?
Dr. Pepper's from Texas. They don't need you.
They have a ridiculous... Dr. Pepper does not have a degree, man. It's all marketing. Yeah. I don't like Pepsi. I don't like Coke.
I don't really like... You know, I like cherry Coke. I really do. Coca-Cola itself is a whatever product. Tell you the truth, my drink, if I had a go-to beverage... And I do. It's Barks root beer. Specifically Barks. It used to be Dad's back in the day, but Dad's did something. A shout out to you, Dad's, except you changed your formula and now your root beer tastes like trash.
I don't remember ever liking Dad's. I do like Barks. And I like Mug still, I guess, but I like a good, like a Weinhardt's root beer too.
You fancy drinking a Weinhardt's root beer.
I know, man.
Check your privilege.
Oh my God.
Check your freaking privilege at the door. You're a richer.
Yeah.
A richer. Fuck, I love South Park. But you're still... Go ahead.
Do you still have A&Ws out there? Like the store?
Yeah, I mean, they're not that common.
Over here.
They suck, but they're not that common. I mean, that's a problem with it. I actually don't like A&W root beer because it has too much of a vanilla taste.
Oh, okay.
Like and then the restaurants themselves, it's like going to a Dairy Queen for a burger. I don't go to a Dairy Queen for a burger. I go to a Dairy Queen for a freaking Frosty or whatever the frick they're called. A twist cone, a blizzard. Yeah. Probably a blizzard, really. That's the only reason I'm going to a Dairy Queen. I don't actually eat fast food that much. I'm a pretty healthy individual. But if I had to choose one that I could eat, Tyler, again, that I cannot hear, it's Jack in the Box.
What, you don't have Jack in the Boxes?
No.
What happened?
They're just not here. We don't have the franchise out here. Maybe I should get the money together and open up a franchise. But I miss Jack in the Crack. I miss Taco Tuesdays. You know, it wasn't a good night out with your friends unless you showed up at Jack in the Box at 2 in the morning to get shitty dollar tacos.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth.
And then you would go sometimes and the drive-thru would just be closed and you couldn't figure out why. It was just because everybody was swapping meth out in the parking lot during a smoke break. You just have to wait for them to open back up again. They didn't really care that you were there.
Oh, my God. But you live in a very convenient location to understand the greatness that is Dick's Hamburgers.
Yeah. Oh, I should have been wearing my Dick socks for this. Yeah, I have.
You should have.
Several pairs of Dick socks.
So, like, a lot of people who don't live in the Seattle area don't know about Dick's. So Dick's is original from the 19 was it the 50s, or are they even older than the 50s?
I think it's the 50 something. Yeah, and they still have the aesthetic. They still look like it's existing.
Walk up window and everything. Still
walk up windows on almost all of them. There's like two that have actual sit down restaurants, but most of them are those old walk up windows like you'd see in the movie The Founder about the beginning of McDonald's or whatever. Like they still do it that way. You just still stand outside. I mean, it's Seattle, so there's big overhead things so that it can rain on you and you don't get soaked. But yeah, it's old.
Well, mostly mist.
you can't get special stuff there. You have what's on the menu. You can't ask for any changes. They will just tell you no. It's quantity over quality. They just spit them out. They're like shitty, greasy burgers. They're awesome.
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
I tell you the truth, I like their like milkshakes there. That's their shakes where it's at.
And so are their fries if you eat them right away. Like they don't last for more than 15 seconds before they start,
they start to get that
appreciated.
Yeah. An interesting thing about Seattle, because I lived there for twice in my life, as a child and as a young adult. Across from the Seattle Art Museum when I was a boy.
Across from the art museum.
Yeah, this is from the SAM specifically. Okay. So if you're looking across the street towards the Sound, which means if you're looking across, you're looking towards Pike Place Market.
Yes.
Down the hill. And to your left was what was a Wolfgang Puck restaurant. I don't know if it's still there. Probably not there still. I don't
think so anymore.
But to the right across the street was an adult movie theater. And
it's still there, I think, or at least the strip club showgirls thing is still there, which is only like a block away.
I always thought this was such an interesting contrast about Seattle. Seattle tries to be a lot more than what it is. In reality, like, so you have a lot of, like, when I was there, I lived with my uncle who was a Microsoft executive. And you have a lot of people in his circle trying to be upper class and fancy and show off culture and dignity in Seattle, that it's a world-class city. Yeah. But there's such contrast in Seattle because Seattle's also a junkie capital, a runaway capital.
Yeah.
There's dock workers and
homeless capital.
A dirty city.
And there's a lot of people. Okay. So we were going to do a show that we didn't end up getting off the ground because it would have been too logistically difficult, but it was called Gentrified with an exclamation point, Gentrified. And the concept was it took place on Capitol Hill, and it was all the gays and the artists left up there complaining about how rent was getting out of control while they didn't get better jobs that would allow them to stay there or whatever, right? And willfully ignoring that they displaced the Black community that was there before them. And it was just this, it was just a showcase of hyperbolic hypocrisy and ridiculousness, because there's this huge percentage of Seattle that is completely suspicious of that new money and resists it and does not want it to come in and wants to keep things dirty and grungy and weird. And there's like a fundamental conflict there. And, you know, you could, if you wanted to, I guess you could stretch the truth a little bit and squint and make it like a political thing, but it's more of a, they're all kind of a liberally, I mean, there's some bros there, but it's not really like a political red blue divide. It's a tech money, non-tech money divide. Like, and it does make for an interesting place.
It's clicky. That's what it is.
Well, okay. Groups. It is. It's like Seattle is like high school. Like everyone already has their own little group, and it's really hard to break into any one of them. Like everybody's super lonely there at first. Like the Seattle freeze is a thing that people talk about, and it's real. Yeah.
And then you're dealing with 200 days of rainier, which, to be fair, isn't rain for the most part. It's mist most of the time. It's like a mist. It's
hard rain here that often. Yeah.
No. Yeah. It's very light. That's why everybody, well, I don't know if they still do it, but everybody used to wear fleece jackets because it was the perfect level. Like it could get a little wet, but you stay warm.
Still fine.
Yeah.
It's warmer here too. Climate change and everything. I mean, it's a little bit warmer and a little bit drier than it used to be. Like when I first moved to the area, there was fog all the time, and it's very rarely foggy here anymore. And when I first moved to the area, there were very rarely really warm days, and now summer is legit here. Like,
yeah. Well, I remember living in the Snohomish River Valley over there up in Snohomish, Washington, actually Clearview. Technically my address was Snohomish, but we lived out in the, you know, where people had land and big ass houses. And I remember looking down on the valley and the Snohomish River in the morning, and every morning from spring to about mid August, the bottom of that valley was blanketed with a thick, thick layer of fog. And it was something to behold. You know,
it's
and
so cool. I mean, I loved it when I first got here. Yeah. And every downtown Seattle was the same way. The actual city covered in fog, like half the days of the year, when I first moved to this area. And it just very rarely happens now, to the point where it's kind of magical again when it does.
Some of my best stories in life come from the Seattle area. I spent so many years there as a child. I mean, like, the first time I went to Chinatown was during the WTO riots. And I went with my best friend's Thai mom and him to go have Tom Kha. We went to go have soup.
And, that's cool.
And we drove by the riots, and I saw it. And it was like my other friend who lived down the street, who I was in Boy Scouts with, his dad was one of the cops patrolling that riot. I remember getting to check out his riot gear and stuff after everything, and it was pretty interesting. But I have a really good story, and it's raunchy for all the viewers that are going to listen. This is disgusting. It's sexually explicit in nature, and if you're not interested in that, you're probably not going to want to listen to this. But I thought I'd give you a heads up.
Put up a timestamp where they can skip to if they're sensitive.
Yeah, why not, right? It's only fair. Otherwise, it's a hell of a story, and you're going to be shocked and appalled. And it also speaks to about when I was a younger man who made worse decisions than I do now. You have to keep in mind that this is 18-year-old Andrew, not 32-year-old Andrew. We're two different people now. But, okay, so I lived, me and my buddy Davis Fizzler, really good, one of my best friends. We became friends because my last name is Davis and his first name is Davis. And we both lost our mothers at an age. His mother was tragically murdered, and my mom, well, she wasn't around. So, you know, we were Boy Scouts together. Anyway, so when I moved back when I was 18, I ended up living with him in his uncle's house, and we kind of took over the West Wing of it. His uncle worked at Boeing. He did really well for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, Boeing.
And he'd worked at Boeing for like 20 years. Moved up the ranks. Like he was doing really well for himself. And we lived in the Western Wing of that house because he was a saint. And he knew us when we were like little babies, basically, and had a soft spot for us. He shouldn't have. He should have thrown us to the streets.
Sure.
Anyways. One day, me and Davis went up to go to the Albertsons shopping center there, which had a Subway in it, to go visit my buddy Ricky, who worked at Subway. This girl in the parking lot approached us. Her name was Mary. She was 17. She asked me and Davis if we could buy her cigarettes because she was underage. Davis said he would and went in and did that. And I talked to her. Now, she was dressed like she just came from the gym in 2007. She had 2007 yoga pants on and a very tight halter top. And this was a well-endowed young lady who was handsome, to say the least, which is a funny way to describe. I like describing modern people as handsome, especially women, because it's such an old-fashioned way to do
it. I call women handsome quite often. I don't know why. I don't mean anything bad by it either.
It's great.
It's a compliment, and it seems to bug people.
It's wholesome. That's what it is. So anyways, I was like, I could feel the vibes off this girl. You know what I mean? Like that was there, and it was instant. Well, he came back out, and I was talking to Mary about going and getting some weed, because that's what I was about. And Davis wasn't having it because I was engaged, and had a fiance.
Okay.
He was like, Andrew's gonna go and fucking sleep with this girl.
Screw stuff up, yeah.
And I'm like, fuck you, Davis. You don't know what I'm doing. So, anyways, her and I decide, yeah, let's go do this. So we go visit run around trying to find some weed. We get it. And we're sitting in her car, and like, then there was that moment of where like, I knew that if I did something, I could get kind of some kind of sexual favor. Mm-hmm. If I just said the right thing in the moment, made the right move, it was there. The feeling was there. The air of consent was there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody who's an adult knows what I'm talking about. It was there. And I looked at her as I held her hand and I said, I'm engaged. I'm sorry. I can't do anything. And she was disappointed, visually disappointed. And she's like, that's okay. You did the right thing. I respect that. And to my credit, that was the right thing to do.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But the story goes on.
I figured.
We kept Mary around. A, because I thought she was cute. And B, she brought free drugs around. Truly. she would bring drugs over and do them with us, and we didn't ask her to do it. We didn't tell her, you know what I mean? And so I was like all about it. There's this cute girl who wants to do drugs with us. She had an ulterior motive of where she was trying to sleep with me at the time. And that was pretty open in the air. And I would have been resisting it for a while. But my buddy Davis, who is one of my best friends of all time, and still I consider her like a brother, he had never even touched a boob or seen a boob or slept with a woman.
And this is, you guys are like 18-ish?
18, yeah. And I told Davis, I was like, Davis, as your friend, I swear to God, I'm going to get you some action, my friend, because I was 18 and I didn't really understand a lot. And there's a lot of ignorance in that statement when you talk, when actually discussing what male and female relationships are like. But this is what I said. And so one day, Mary came over, we smoked a fat blunt, we went outside to go smoke a cigarette, because we'd smoke weed inside, but we would smoke cigarettes outside, figure that one out. And we were just, I was discussing with Mary about how I liked her breasts. I said, I love them. They're really great.
Okay.
And this is just because I had a motive. What I was trying to do was get her to pull them out so Davis could see some boobs.
Yeah, I get where you're going with this.
And started having a talk discussion with her to try to get her to do that. And she said this, and it didn't occur to me that it was fucked up at the time, but it's fucked up. She's like, even my daddy wants to see my boobs. They're so nice. And I said, Mary, I'm not your fucking daddy. Show me your tits. And then she did.
Yikes. Okay.
That happened. And then Davis got to touch a boob. I touched a boob. I shouldn't have touched a boob. I shouldn't even have asked her to see the tits because I was engaged. But this happened. A couple weeks go by. There's some more shit that happens. Like, I was asleep in the back of her car and she was involved in a hit and run and like all kinds of wild things with Mary. Mary is a loose cannon to the highest degree.
Sounds like it. Okay.
One day, me, Ricky, Mary, and Davis are sitting up in our game room drinking Sparks malt liquors. A flat of them. We had a flat of them back before they got banned. And I looked at Mary and I said, Mary, if you fuck Davis, I'll fuck you. That's what I said to her, because I was just kind of like trying to figure out how to do this for Davis. I was going to have to move soon, and I knew that. And me and Davis weren't going to live together anymore because things were souring there. And I was just like, we're going to do this. And I wasn't like in my intention. I didn't actually believe that I was going to do it. I was just lying. She gets undressed right there. Right fucking then, takes all her clothes off in front of us and gets on Davis's lap. And starts, you know, Dave and Ricky's like drinking a beer saying like, this is better than porn. So I grab Ricky and I'm like, come on, man, we're going to leave Davis be. This is, oh, we don't need to be involved in this. So we went down to the front porch and chilled outside drinking. We'd switched to tea because we weren't able to drink. We were underage. You're not supposed to. We didn't drink outside of that game room when we were there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because Dale wouldn't like it, and we like Dale. So anyways, we're still sitting there on the porch. My fiance rolls up, dude. She comes up. She's talking to us. And fucking out comes Davis covered in fucking blood like he had murdered her, like he had stabbed her. And I'm like, what the fuck, Davis? And everybody else was like, what the fuck, Davis? And out behind him comes a naked Mary with the heaviest period flow I ever fucking seen rolling down her legs. And my fiance at the time fucking hated Mary because she knew Mary was trying to get at me.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being mad at me like she should have been, she was mad at Mary. So she started fighting her fucking all right there on the porch. And my fiance was dressed. Mary was naked. There was blood everywhere. And it was wild. That's not the last time I talked to Mary. I ended up divorcing that girl that I married, my fiance.
You did marry her.
I did marry her. We got divorced. I ended up sleeping with Mary and Carmen, her friend, the last time I saw them. And then, here's the crazy thing. So this is the last I heard about Mary. Her, Davis, Ricky, and some of our other friends from back in the day who were still, you know, it's a neighborhood. They all went down to the river to go have a fire and hang out. Mary stayed behind because there were some kids she was talking to from the neighborhood. She ended up getting caught sleeping with a 13-year-old in the back of my buddy Ricky's truck later on.
Yikes.
Yikes. And she ended up, last I heard of her, she was married to a white supremacist in northern Idaho.
I mean, okay, that sounds like a natural conclusion to that particular avenue.
I don't, you know, the problem is I don't know her last name, and I would love to see where she's at in life. I would love to find out what happened to that crazy poor girl. And you know what's sad? Like, she had every advantage in life. Both of her parents were doctors. She wasn't dumb. She just made really, really, really poor choices. And I think she was mentally ill. And
sounds like she was maybe
abused.
Yeah.
I was going to add that too, especially with the daddy comment.
Yeah.
That really hits home. Like,
yeah.
How did I not see it at the time? That's the weird thing. That's the thing that hits me. Like,
well, you can ask yourself that as often as you want, but you were 18. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, you're an idiot. Like, the amount of nuance of the world I missed at 18 staggers me. You know?
I know. This is back in the days when I didn't
have the right perspective on anything. Like, I was barely learning how to think about other people in the first place. Like, my super ego was underdeveloped. Yeah.
I had not learned how to think about anybody at all other than myself at that point. I was really immature. We would drive down the Bothell Everett Highway hanging out of my buddy's truck screaming Phil Collins is a middle-aged panty dropper. And I mean, just like stupid, stupid, stupid things.
Yeah, I remember doing a lot of stupid things when I was that age.
But I have a lot of good stories because of all the stupid things I have.
I have a lot of stories I used to think were good.
And it's not that I like them, it's that other people do. See, I don't mind looking like an idiot. I don't care.
No, not me either, particularly.
Yeah, it's like, you want to hear something stupid I did? I got 100 stories. I could tell you about all the impressive stuff all day, you'll think I'm bragging.
Right.
But if I tell you the bad stories, you're entertained.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good point.
Well, it's not a good comedy without some tragedy.
Yeah. Well, comedy is just tragedy plus time, really.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It really speaks to people and how we perceive things.
Yeah.
It's kind of the deeper thing that I wanted to talk about by bringing up this story. It's a beautiful segue, believe it or not.
Nice. Well done.
The people are more readily interested in hearing the negative stories and the fucked up stories, and they're more willing to accept these things instead of the hard truths of, like, here's how I achieved certain successes. Here's what I did that you can do. People are more, maybe it's not the belief. Maybe what I'm missing is that they're not willing to put in the effort, but I'm making the bold statement so that I can be challenged by Mr. Tyler Hill, and hopefully it'll lead to something really beautiful.
So what are you saying exactly?
I'm saying that most people are more likely to believe the bad over the good all the time. And as such, our entertainment culture revolves around making yourself feel better than other people, like you're superior.
I think there's a truth to the superiority of our current popular entertainment.
There's
more nuance than that and everything, but like, when you say that, anything that I want to say in defense of that or against that is short-circuited by my knowledge that the Kardashians exist or any reality television. I mean, the point of reality TV seems to have evolved into, we're going to show you rich people's lives and we're going to show you them behaving like horrible people and miserable so that you feel like you don't need the money that we're not letting you have.
Yeah. Or we're going to follow around a bunch of kids from Jersey so that you just be happy you're not from New Jersey.
Yeah. I don't know. I
never watched it
so much with reality television anyway, but feeling superior to people is—it's not just reality TV. I mean, it's that's what social media is, right?
Yeah. Well, it's life. I mean, like, that's what Facebook is. What I used to describe it as, life through a rose-colored lens.
Yeah. Yeah. I quit Facebook in 2014 and did not realize how depressed it was making me. Like, I just started feeling better about myself because, like, everyone's life is crap. But, like, on Facebook, the lie is everyone's life is great. And after you acclimate to that, you forget that it's a lie. You see everyone else doing well, except for the few people who complain too much. And it's just like, get over it already. It's a toxic, terrible place that just made me feel bad about myself. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it is. Twitter's the same thing.
I mean, you know, Twitter is just all about being right at people, like being correct at them, you know, and there's a moral superiority to that, too. And everybody loves taking somebody down and hopping on board bandwagons of attacking people. And everybody likes being part of a mob for some reason.
Well, and then there's a more. Yeah. So to get to that, I'm a part of Jewish Twitter and we attack people who say anti-Semitic things in mass regularly.
Sure.
And sometimes I see it get taken too far.
Yeah.
Because people are so addicted to outrage. There's a dopamine hit when you send that.
Good Lord, yes.
And that's what people are addicted to. You know, the Twitter could be a really beautiful thing. We're seeing it a little bit in that people could actually discuss and engage ideas. I mean, Twitter is Instagram, but words only. So you're supposed to be espousing good ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's why I'm still on Twitter is because ultimately it isn't anything other than conversational. Like you have to just have, you can talk and that's, and everybody's equal on it or they're supposed to be. And I have a problem with blue check culture and things like that, but like, I still find it useful, but the whole concept of the internet has gotten all screwed up. I don't think we were evolutionarily or biologically equipped to handle social media.
No.
You know, we have an unprecedented access to information, and that's what the internet was supposed to be. And instead of expanding us, it siloed us, and we're all separate. And
well, and it's the way that, in my opinion, if I was to make it like, this is what I believe, it still could be those things that we set out to be, and what it was kind of like in the early 2000s, early noughties, as the British say.
And still is. You can find all that stuff. Like, it didn't go away. It just got shouted out by a lot of other garbage.
It's not the popular part of the internet. Even GeoCities was more constructive as a social media network than Facebook. Or I mean, even MySpace was more socially constructive.
What was the guy's name? Tom? Tom had it right. He was everybody's friend, and then he sold it for $300 million or whatever it was and just got out.
And became a photographer. He's a genius.
Living his real life. Like
Tom, Tom is my first and only friend. That's all I'm going to say right now. But the current models cannibalizes its users. So that's the thing. So they, I mean the social media networks, your Facebooks, your Twitters, your Instagrams, your TikToks. I said it wrong. I know. They create the bubbles so that it limit, so people will get more engaged with their particular, with the platform.
Well, the whole point is to get you to not leave.
Yeah. So the whole point is to keep you there. And you're the product. You're the marketing. You're the product. You're the product. That's what I mean by cannibalizing its users. Mm-hmm. It's not the product isn't the platform. You're the product on the platform. You're a chicken that has been lured into a coop and you stay there willfully,
mm-hmm.
digesting everything they put at you and using their links and being addicted to Facebook Marketplace. And if you could get rid of that model, you could still have that platform there,
sure,
but you just get rid of the enforcement of bubbles. Can change the algorithm to not reinforce your beliefs or show you things that you're interested in.
Well, the algorithm is kind of the problem, not necessarily how the algorithm is coded this particular year, but just the fact that we're using one to outsource our morality and interest. Like, yep. It's always going to give you malformed results. I mean, it can always be something that's gained. Like, even if you don't know exactly what Google's algorithm is, even if you don't know exactly what YouTube's algorithm is, you can A/B test it to come up with a good enough theory to abuse it. Like, you just can. And so until it's back to which it's not sustainable, how many thousands of hours a minute of YouTube content is uploaded. I mean, like, you can't have humans actually parsing it all. But when you take that away, that's when stuff starts going seriously south.
Yeah.
Because we're not properly educated enough to be able to handle that kind of misinformation fire hose ourselves.
No. Well, and that's the thing. Like, it's been such a rapid development of technology. In our lifetimes, me and you are both of the age of where I remember when I was on my first computer that had the internet in 94. And I didn't do anything. My cousin did, but I remember seeing it. And it
wasn't... I remember pre-internet very vividly.
Yeah, it was great. I played outside a lot with really cool sticks.
Yeah, I did stuff that wasn't on the internet. I mean, like...
And even when the internet was more of a thing in the noughties, I'm going to keep saying that. I'm going to leave that to the British. I tell you what, noughties sounds better than the thousands.
I said
thousands,
yeah.
You know, we played things like RuneScape. It was dial-up internet.
Yeah.
You couldn't stream Netflix.
No.
Skype was an amazing...
More importantly, you couldn't stream YouTube. Like,
Skype was a revolutionary thing that didn't work very well, that people were really impressed with for a long time. And now it's what? Now it's relegated to the garbage can of history because it's a shit product. Now, I said it, Microsoft. You heard me. You don't have freaking, they don't, it's a one channel audio system. Come on, dude. Yeah. At least be two channel or one channel per person.
Yeah.
Get out of here. That's a recording issue. Anyways, it's so accessible. And that's another problem. Part of the problem too, is that we have access for the mentally unstable who have crazy, crazy, crazy ideas. Now they're out there. They're getting yelled at. By people who are getting a dopamine hit every time they yell at someone, then the crazy people are finding other crazy people.
I was going to say, that's the more important thing, is you used to have some really weird out there idea. You were just over in Saskatchewan by yourself being weird and crazy. And now they can all find each other and reinforce each other. And I mean, as much as you want to say that, like, there's irony at play in the Flat Earth Society stuff, like, there's also just legitimately crazy people that get together and be crazy at each other.
That was going to exactly bring up Flat Earth as an example of this. It's like the perfect example. Like, I'd never even considered that anybody still believed that the Earth was flat until one day in the 2000s where it was like, what? Are you kidding me right now?
I don't think anybody believed the Earth was flat until the Flat Earth Society. I mean, Christopher Columbus knew the world was round, like everybody did.
Christopher Columbus didn't even know about bacteria, bro.
Yeah. And it was not hard. It was not hard for almost every civilization that ever existed to figure out that we live on a globe. Like, it was a pretty easy. I mean, it's an anachronism. It's like the whole, like, you only use 10% of your brain thing. It's a myth that somebody made up to make it seem like we're more. I mean, someone just started saying we used to think the Earth was flat because you can imagine stupid people thinking that, but nobody ever really did. And now people do, apparently, and don't think that the moon is real. Or excuse me, just landing on it.
Well, and I can say for sure I met one of the men who walked on the moon.
You weren't there, man. You weren't there. You don't know.
And meeting him, you just know.
Oh, like, who'd you meet?
Charlie Duke.
Nice.
The youngest one.
Yeah.
And also he was in ground control during Apollo 13 and helped save.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, big guy, big deal. Really nice guy. I have a shirt covered in his blood. He got spurred by a rooster. And I used my nice, thick flannel shirt to sop up his wound.
Stop it, yeah.
But, you know, if cloning becomes affordable, I'm going to have an army of astronauts. You better believe. Yes,
perfect.
Freaking fighter test pilot, MIT graduates who went and pooped in a bag on the moon.
Yeah.
That's... That, you know what's awful about that whole situation? There was these people. So it was a guided hunt, right? And he was a guest.
Oh, okay.
He was giving a presentation about the moon. You had all these wealthy and interesting people. You had people from Duck Dynasty. You had the CEO and founder of Silencer Co. Some other CEOs of other companies. And they were all important guys. They were all titans of industry, leaders in their respective fields. And 80% of the questions that they had for the astronaut that went to the moon was about how he pooped and peed in space.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right. We are barely not monkeys.
And
the smartest of us are still obsessed with poop jokes, you know?
David Bowles from Duck Dynasty outshot a SEAL team Commander.
Okay.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's funny.
Anybody that knows, it's worth mentioning. I really like that guy, actually. When I did have Facebook, he was my Facebook friend. He offered to be my business mentor.
Oh.
Yeah. But I was unstable and did not know what to do. So I tell you what, we're going to wrap this up here in a minute.
We are. We didn't talk about anything yet.
We talked about a bunch of things, Tyler James Hill.
Okay.
But I'm going to finish on a topic here. This is an important one. Leading on this segment, because this segment is a much more laid back and chilled one. It's not so serious as the salon. It's not so serious as some of the other things like the David Walker sessions that are going on. I've done the super serious shit before. I'm not super interested in it because you have the same arguments 100 times to 100 different people, and it's not interesting. I want to talk about life. I want to talk about interesting stories. I want to hear funny stuff. And I need a different perspective, and I need you for that, Tyler James Hill, because you are my opposite in many ways.
You think so?
But we also are the same in many ways. Otherwise, it wouldn't work.
Mm.
There's commonality
here. Maybe that's true. I think that one of the things that we just have in common that people seem to be lacking is that it doesn't matter. Like, it's just fine. It's fine. I hate this thing about, everybody is engaging in identity politics. Everybody.
Even myself, and I try not to.
Like, some of my favorite people are people that agree with me say I should not have as favorite people. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's ridiculous. And so
I think George Carlin would have been that way.
Well, yeah. People, I would like George Carlin's voice to be around right now. We could have used him in the last few years. But if you had someone new, like just to pick a random person and take George Carlin's mind and soul and stick him in that person so that he continued to do stand-up, he would have a significantly difficult time not being screamed at by everybody and just chased out of the public square.
That's true.
So even if all we can do is just say that you can disagree with people politically and not hate each other, just be friendly. Jesus, well, friends first. That's the show.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. Like, I recognize your humanity, Mr. Tyler James Hill. The BLG, which I still think is awesome. I can't believe it took you a bit to get it. The big liberal giant. We're going to make you a cool shirt. I don't often use
the word liberal and myself in the same sentence. And so it took me a second because I thought someone had just messed up the original acronym.
From the BFG. I love that
book. I was trying not to be a reply guy and be like, I think you mean BFG, guys.
You should be like that. I need that. But what I want to talk about is something I've been doing this show now for over a year. Not this rendition, but total. And the team that we have here, and anybody who does decide to pursue this kind of thing, where you're publicly having discussions, putting your picture of your image out there, putting your thoughts out there to the public forum, is very much not feeling that you're qualified or that you're fake, you're phony. Mm-hmm. I'm going to finish on that because I've been doing this for a while now. And, you know, I've talked to presidential candidates. I've talked to all kinds of types of people, so many people running for Senate, so many people running for Congress. I've talked to celebrities. I've gone hunting with celebrities. I have celebrities on my PlayStation friends list. Provable. I can prove it. 10 points for anybody that can guess which one.
I won't say anything then.
Yeah, you shouldn't. I've come to the conclusion.
All that, you've got imposter syndrome.
And I still have imposter syndrome. And everybody I talk to about it has it.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of important. And I want to talk about, like, how that plays into, like, regular life. Because that plays everywhere in our regular life. To, like, job interviews. Like, people applying for jobs that they think they could do, but they don't think they could do. Where they start to doubt themselves. Because that's what imposter syndrome is doubt.
Yeah, I mean, society is kind of structured around keeping people where they're at. I mean, when you brought up job interviews, when you go to apply for a job, you don't have a conversation about the job you're going to do. You have a conversation about the jobs you already have done. That's the wrong way to have a job interview. Mm-hmm. And yet, as a society, that's how we've agreed to do it. How can you not come out the other side feeling like you have imposter syndrome if you go to apply for a job and all you do is talk about the jobs you already don't have, not the job that you will do? That's always 2% of the conversation or 10% of the conversation. And I've had job interviews where I've just asked not to talk about what's on my resume. Like, it's there. You know, can we just talk about what I have the capability of doing, like, aspirationally? Like, what I know you have to prove stuff, but why not have a conversation about this is the job? How would you do the job? Right. And so you walk away going, okay, I tried to justify my existence up until this point. That's all I accomplished, you know? And it's the same thing with, I saw someone tweet today. You're on Jewish Twitter. I'm on writer Twitter. And I saw someone tweet today. And he had a blue check. I'm against blue check culture. One of the reasons why I'll get blue check followers or interactions with blue check people and then they'll unfollow me is because I don't treat them like they're special. Like, I'm just like, okay, if you want to be on my friend, I'm just going to say weird stuff to you. Because that's what I do on Twitter, is I say weird stuff to people. So I don't know who this blue check was. All I saw was the blue check. And honestly, I need to get past this. I'm starting to discount accounts because I see the blue check first. And then I'm like, I'm really not interested in what that person has to, you know what I'm saying? But anyway,
it's discriminatory past a reasonable level, because you need to discriminate, but you can't over discriminate.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You can't take it too far. But I saw someone say looking for a writing partner. So someone with a blue check, you know, is looking for someone to partner with to either write or to keep each other honest, whatever it is. And I also saw that it had 500 replies and all of that kind of thing. And all I could think of is, like, how can you vet something like that on Twitter? How can you write this? All you can do is, like, ask for writing samples. And so out of 500 people, like, let's just say, I think it's more, but let's just say it's 500 people. You're only going to pick one. And let's say you actually pick one from this thread that you started, and you honor that and you commit to picking one of these people. That means that 499 of them are going to get told that what you showed me is not good enough. So the whole culture of choosing one person out of many is going to lead everybody to imposter syndrome. I don't know if it's escapable.
Well, shit. And especially in that industry. Yeah. Where you're the whole industry set up to where you write something, submit it, and you get a nice letter saying it sucked.
Oh, God. Agents,
if you
get
a letter.
Like, if you have an agent works for you. What other job does the interview flip like that? Like, I am interviewing to have people work for me. Like, everything is opposite there. So maybe it's not the best comparison to real life, but...
My wife had a job interview with a school recently, and it went a little differently than normal. She said that she was willing to give them a job interview.
Yes, I try to approach it that way. That's a good advice for anybody that's watching, is, like, interview the interviewees. Don't be the interview.
And this is the thing. Like, this is a job that she's so qualified for. It's a confidence thing. And ultimately, that's what we're getting to. You know, we all suffer from these days of doubts, these moments of trepidation of our value and our abilities. But we need to overcome that. And I just wanted to bring it up so that everybody knows, you know, it is everybody. It is not just you, especially for the younger people that watch. Older, you know, people in their 30s and stuff tend to have learned this by now. But a lot of younger people, they don't really think about it. They're caught up in looking at themselves, and they're worried about how other people look at them and how other people think of them. Most people are not thinking about you. Most people are worried about you worrying about them. So if you fail, who fucking cares? It's like being wrong. What does it matter? It doesn't.
Also, nobody knows what they're doing. I mean, it's just, you have to keep that in your, like, literally nobody knows what they're doing. There is no such thing as an adult. There is no such thing as a parent. Like, those are just people with certain labels that we've temporarily applied on them, but there's no endowed powers. Like, every great story about anything that no one had heard of before was a bunch of people that had no idea what they're doing and had no idea why it worked in the first place and made a bunch of mistakes that turned out in their favor and blah, blah. I mean, it's some of it's luck, but. Yeah, I feel like an imposter all the time because I've almost been successful, like really successful, like several times, and I'm still not. And so when you're in your 30s, and you're told that success is the only thing that matters, it's really hard to fight against that and be like, but what is my value as a person outside of like late stage capitalism?
What do I love? What makes me happy? What brings value to my life? These are the questions that we need to ask. And we just need to believe in ourselves. And, you know, a little support to those that you care about helps, and support from them helps. So build your support structure. Don't worry about your doubt. Push through it. This is pretty much my whole message for the end of this nice first segment that we had that I had a lot of fun on. I want to try to keep this.
We'll just do it randomly, huh?
Yeah, well, actually, this is going to be set up to be at least a weekly thing. We've not totally nailed it down, dear viewers. We decided, hey, you know what? I want to have Tyler James Hill on the Coffee and Cocaine Show. I think he'd be an asset. And then you know, I think Mr. Barrington and Mr. David are doing really good on their own. I'm going to kind of let them do their thing over there. And so I'm going to start and try to do something that I really enjoy. So I've been messing around with a few things, and this is something that this is the format I found that I want to do and the person I want to do it. And you've been a great addition in our salon so far. Everybody loves you.
Good. Hey, that's nice to hear.
No, it is great. And it brings, at least you're not dumb. I appreciate your intelligence, Mr. Tyler James Hill.
I am glad I'm not dumb too. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're not dumb. Yeah. Hats off to your mom. Anyways, every Saturday, 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, we have the salon. Come on in. It's an open forum. We have the Walker Sessions being released. The Central Syndicate is going to be released here too. As you all know, that's David Walker's other deal that from the inception of this show, or at least his addition to it, he has been planning. And then we have some solo stuff coming up from Barrington in the near future. We'll keep you posted and updated about that. Keep an eye out for merch. We have a website in production. There's a lot of announcements, dear people, including the creation of a Patreon, which will be up soon, in which you can decide to support the show if you so choose. Either way, if you choose, if you don't, that doesn't matter to me. I still like you. So does Mr. Tyler James Hill. Thank you for tuning in to the Coffee and Cocaine Show, and we will catch you next time.
Peace.